Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to SCAN Radio Show 2974. SCAN stands for Stop Child Abuse Now, and is a program of NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We have a single purpose here at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And tonight's Thursday, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have survivor professionals come in to guide the discussions. And tonight's survivor professional is Monica Boglin from Puyallup, Washington. She's a survivor of sexual, physical, and emotional child abuse. Her perpetrators were all family members, and her parents were intent on passing on to Monica the behavior that their parents had done to them. She has also lived with lupus since she was 29, a painful autoimmune disease that has long been linked to adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. Monica became a life coach and a therapist and notes, "I finally found a way to forgive the unforgivable and to firmly keep anyone and everything harmful out of my life." She's earned her master's degree in metaphysical science and counseling and is well on her way to earning a PhD in the same field. "I hope to further use my story," she says, "as a way to become of service and to help those along the path to their own healing, because I now know that hope and help is available." And with that, I would like to introduce Monica Boglin. Hi, Monica.
Hello there. How is everyone tonight?
I'm great. And John Anderson is on with us as well. Hi, John.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for being here, Monica. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about tonight's topic.
Awesome. I can't wait to get into tonight's topic.
All right. Well, tonight's topic, Monica has suggested it, and we're all for it because I have a lot to contribute to this topic. The topic is toxic parents. And with that, Monica, I'll let you begin.
Great. Thank you, Annie. I'm kind of going through my notes here as we get ready to get started. And I think what's going to be beneficial is that we are all going to have to agree that since we now are all adults, survivors of that childhood abuse, that we have to, again, lead first with, for me, the first step to healing is to forgiving yourself and to understanding that there is absolutely nothing that you could have done differently as the child to change the environment in which you found the abuse. So with toxic parents, this is going to kind of go even more of a broad, and we'll expand it out to toxic adults, because in my case, my abuse came from my parents, but in other cases, it may have been from another family member. So outside of your immediate childhood circle, which are just, and if abuse was happening between you and other children, then you got to know that those other children were mimicking the behaviors themselves, as they were also victims of abuse. So a great article that I found, and this is with psychologynow.com. It has a great definition, a broad definition of what we're looking for in toxic parents. And it says that toxic parents are people who are abusive emotionally. They are also emotionally immature. They have narcissistic traits, or they struggle with other personality disorders, mental diseases, or addiction. We have to look at this at least from the point of view that has helped pull me from the brink of my own personal emotional obliteration. And that is through my discipline as a teacher and now a counselor and moving forward into being a would-be author. And only because I have developed the discipline in my professional life that I'm able to now look back at these traits and these behaviors of these parents and adults who then allowed the behavior, right? Because we know that that's a lot of what happens as well. And forgiveness has got to be for you. I cannot say that I have personally forgiven my parents because, for one, they've never asked for it. They have never acknowledged the abuse, which is a signifier of the narcissism. It is much more and has been, even for them as being individuals that are well into their 70s, almost 80s now, it is very important for them to look like really good people and to look like nice people and to seem like nice people than to actually be good people or to be nice people. When the reality is those are traits and behaviors that they were never taught themselves. So it is systematically, it is generationally, it is an environmentally. So once I've been able to dissect it on a professional level, I've been able to get past the acts of what has actually happened to me. Even not being, because I feel like the forgiveness has to happen, the person who is being forgiven needs to ask for the forgiveness. And I'm pretty sure all of you guys will agree with me that asking for forgiveness is probably going to be the last stake in the heart for the abusers, because then they have to admit that they actually abused you, right? They have to admit that they did something wrong. They have to admit that they were the bad person. And so since that hardly, rarely ever happens, and when it does, I mentioned this on our last podcast, when it does, they are in some type of dire need, deathbed type of confession situation where they want to alleviate their guilt versus actually help you heal. So there's a difference. There's still that tug of war. with where they've learned this emotional immaturity and manipulation over the years. So you've got to really and truly understand what the signs from, and not any one person is going to fall into all of those patterns. Some may be psychological. It may be, again, addiction. It could be mental health. It could be a lot of things. And more than likely, it is probably a culmination of some of those behaviors. But at some point, as an adult, you have to take a look at yourself and say, the things that I do and say to my children or to other children are wrong. And because I don't know how not to do them, I need to get help in learning how to do things better. And unfortunately, that never really happens most of the time in an abusive household. The child typically ages out, as what I say happens in my case. As I've spoken with a few family members over the years, and it always would puzzle me how I would get these glowing reviews of my parents in their eyes, right? I would have cousins to tell me that they were the best aunt and uncle, or grandkids now that they're the best grandparents. And I always have to bring that home and tell everyone, please hear me clear when I say, at least in my case, my parents abused their children. They did not abuse grandchildren. They did not abuse nieces and nephews. They did not abuse their sisters and brothers. But they felt that the abuse of their children was warranted. Whether they used the word abuse or not is irrelevant. It is what happened. In their mind's eye and in the eye of the emotional manipulator and the emotionally immature person and the narcissistic person, the abuse is they're going to call it discipline, and you got what you deserved, and it was your fault, and you made me do this, and a whole bunch of other things that they come up with other than taking responsibility for their own behavior. So I want to put all of that out there and let everyone know that the toxic parenting and the toxic environment we found ourselves in, it was not our fault. But if for any reason we are repeating those same patterns now as adults, now is the time that you're going to have to stop. And again, you can't change other people. You can't change that husband. You can't change that work environment. You can't change that toxic, distant relative or second or third cousin, but you can change you. And you got to start to love yourself enough to know that you are all you need. And once you begin to realize that and pour into yourself and begin your own healing, you will then have the courage and to seek out the tools that you need to start to eliminate the toxic behavior and the people from your life. So I'll
thank you,
out
Monica.
With that. You guys let me know what you think.
John, would you like to respond?
Yes, I would actually, because she really just threw some really key words there that, to me, when you realize, you know, what's going on here when we're dealing with toxic parents, okay, I think the number one thing is the narcissism, okay, because if you happen to read up or know anyone or even do any type of studying on this topic, which I have extensively in my past, that, you know, one thing you learn about the personalities, okay, of the parents is that they really are self-centered people, you know, if you really want to get down to it. They never really think about you, you know, as a child. They never, you know, think about the things that you need, you know, ever. I mean that's like the last thing that would ever, you know, come out of them, you know, which is to me one of the most damaging things that you could ever do to a child, you know. As a child's growing up, you know, parents are supposed to love and comfort their child, support that child, not, you know, abuse them in any way. But when you do this to a child, you know, the systematic abuses that work off of what's being given to them, never ending, okay? Because not only does it lead to other things, you know, naturally by, you know, Monica, you know, have lupus and things of that nature, many. Let me tell you something. I know that Monica can agree with this. There are many different side effects that come off of this. But when you have extensive, you know, things that have happened to you, especially deep emotional, you know, scarred, you know, from what happened to you through toxic parents, that it could really, really leave a devastating, devastating consequence in your life. And basically, you know, what I've known about this, and I could, you know, see this a lot in them. I don't know about every single one of them, or both, I should say. Maybe one was more than the other, but I really thought that they were like loose cannons. You know what I'm getting? They were just ready to just go off at any given moment, and there was no patience for any type of you know, feelings or that special need of the love that parents should do, not only as one or as a dad or a mom, you know, but as together as parents also. You know, I mean, we all, you know, did fun things with our dad, right? And then we did fun things with our mom and both at times. And you know, I think a child really needs that in their life. And if you have toxic parents, you know, it's so mind-boggling about how to even deal with this. You know, so I'm hoping we can talk about more about dealing with this later on in some of the things that you're going to tell us, because it's pretty soon. I don't know how soon, but I know, Monica, we're going to be calling you doctor, you know, I hope. You know, so we want to make sure that whatever you have to say and any knowledge that you bring, you know, to us on any show that you ever do, I'll always be very interested and motivated to hear what you have to say. So, you know, I would have to say that, you know, bringing up narcissism really goes a long, long way. Yeah.
Thanks,
John.
Well, what about you, Annie?
Molly. What about me? I do have something to say about toxic parents. First, I want to say, you said the first step is to forgive myself. I want to say that I think I have done that. I think I have forgiven myself for who I was and forgiven myself for the ill effects of abuse that persisted through my life and that showed in my behaviors, which weren't really appropriate sometimes. But I forgive myself for that. I do. I'm not hard on myself like I used to be. My parents are dead, and I'm glad for that. And they never asked me for forgiveness, and so I didn't forgive them. And the main reason is that they continued in their bad behavior until death. They died at 86, both of them did. And my father was being sexually inappropriate with me on his deathbed. I'm not going to forgive him. He died acting bad. I'm not going to forgive him. But I forgive myself. I'm sorry if I get passionate about that. We talked a little bit about deathbed confession, and I wrote a novel, and there's a deathbed scene in it. And I put in there what I wanted to have happened instead of what really happened at the end of my abuser's life. And that's all I have to say. Thanks, Monica.
Yeah, no problem. I want to wrap that statement up in saying that I don't want anyone out there that's listening to think that we wish death on people. Let's make sure that people don't hear that the wrong way. But
you are
absolutely right in your feelings, because there comes a point in time where the word parent and son or daughter no longer fits that relationship. And even when I tell people, again, family members that I talk to now, and they hear me address my abusers by their first name, and they are, oh, you don't call them mom or dad anymore? Well, I call them by their name. And the words mom or dad are not appropriate anymore because they never mothered me and they never fathered me. They got pregnant and they had me and they abused me until I stopped the abuse, right? And so I think even in our adult age, no one teaches us how to move your relationship as a son or daughter forward along the track outside of mom or dad. So a lot of us still have these emotional ties to mothers and fathers when they're in their 80s and we're 50s and 60s, and we find ourselves still responding and acting towards these people as if we're still 8 or 9 years old. And that's not our doing. It's their doing and the emotional manipulation that they have carried generationally through their lives. So when you begin to get on your journey and you're changing for the betterment of you, they don't know how to accept it, and they don't know how to deal with the new you. So they only revert back to the only way of behavior that they've ever learned. So when they die and there is no feelings of loss there, people have to understand, I can't lose something that doesn't exist in me anymore. I can't feel a sense of loss or grief about something. That means that you had a relationship, it was loving or nurturing, and you're going to miss that. You can't miss it if it was never there. What you're doing is you're falling into the pattern of still feeding into the narcissistic tendencies of the abusers, regardless of what they say or do, as horrific as it was to you, that you were just supposed to be that grateful little 8-year-old and they pat you on the head and I'm your mother and father and that's the only existence you're ever supposed to have in your life when it comes to the relationship between you and them. So at the end of the day, we have to gulp and take a big gulp of water and swallow that big pill that we're all going to die. Just the inevitable. We are all going to die. How you die has nothing to do with me. But how I live has everything to do with me. And what I refuse to do is to live my life wondering how people who abuse me, who call themselves a mother and father, waste my time wondering how they're going to die. That will never happen. It took years of me, again, finding me and getting on my journey, physically moving away from the family, and then realizing that I was still on the phone or exchanging text messages or social media, and here I am living in another city or living in another state, and I'm still enmeshed in this toxic stuff that everyone has going on in their own lives. And I just woke up one day and realized the crap that I find myself stressing out about and getting all up in arms about every day has nothing to do with me. This is other people's problems. But this is the toxic negativity that I was taught, that regardless of who you are or where you are, I'm supposed to carry the burdens of all that negativity with me wherever I go. And it was then that I realized that I wasn't growing as a person. All of these signs and things started to happen for me in and around those years that I was being diagnosed with lupus. And when you get serious about your health, you have a serious enough scare, you're going to do everything you freaking can to make sure that you get to wake up every day and live and see another day. And if that mean I had to divorce my parents, then that's just what happened. If that meant that I had to, I likened it to a friend of mine once, and it happened with my brother, which is where the molestation went on. It was a short period of time that the molestation happened with my brother, probably a year or so that I can recount from memory-wise, but between maybe the ages of 10 and 12, right? And so after that, it was just back to this just weird brother and sister relationship, you know, but we had become very competitive because we were both athletes. But I can also remember him being the big brother, the older brother, and I'm the younger sister. And I can remember, again, he and my sister had gone off to the military. I used to be just really envious that they had, quote, unquote, left home. But after 2 or 3 years, they both had returned, really, and no real prospects returned and no real avenues of what to do with their lives after the military. I, at that point, was continuing to go through school and fulfill different needs in myself, opening businesses, traveling, was starting to teach, and just really my career was taking off the way that I wanted it. And so when I got the opportunity to finally move out of the area, I can remember getting a really bad vibe from my sister when I asked whenever she wanted to visit to bring the boys down. And it was just a really bad, snippy little, it's going to be too much trouble. We don't never have to visit that way. It's too much out of the way and things of that nature where I just felt she wasn't supportive. So that I chalked up then back then that she didn't have the free babysitter anymore, right, because I had been there through the birth of all three of her sons, and here I am now moving away, and I'm not going to be involved in her life anymore. With my brother and I had this brother-sister relationship where it was close, but I didn't realize what the weird closeness of it was. And it was still 2 years later that someone told me it was me pulling away from the secret of him molesting me. And I can remember after I got moved to the new city, and I'm getting calls from my brother about stuff going on between him and his girlfriend, you know. And I'm like, look, why are you calling me? Like, stop calling me. I'm not there. Leave me alone, blah, blah, blah. I remember having to go through the whole thing, changing my number, blocking his number, going through all that kind of a stuff. And I was out with a friend when it happened again at a relationship, at a restaurant one night, and she's like, "That who's that, an ex-boyfriend or something?" And I thought, you know what? This is exactly what it feels like. It feels like I'm breaking up with an ex-boyfriend, and this is my brother. And it was one of those things, again, that dawned on me. This relationship, how it is now, is very inappropriate. It is not brother and sister. It is something else really weird. It is something else that I know I don't want to be a part of. I'm trying to grow. I'm trying to stretch. I'm trying to find my way in the world. And the people that are my quote-unquote family are giving me a lot of negative, nasty vibes because I moved away. And so that was the start of me really peeling back the layers of that onion on understanding how the toxicity can run through the veins of the family. Because yeah. I saw my father grow up in a family, him being one of 15 or 16 kids, and all but one of my aunts and uncles ever left the state. They ever left the city, I'll put it that way, and moved away permanently. So they were all very toxic and adults. And here they are, 40 and 50-year-old people, and everyone's in everyone's business all the time. Everyone is causing havoc all the time. But everyone lived in their own house. They had their own husbands or wives or kids. But it was total enmeshment and drama and crap every single day, either on the phone or someone came to someone's house or we had a family issue and a function. It was always something. So when I saw it happening to me, I said, you know what? I've had enough. I've had enough. I could at least date it back to my parents and say, I am going to break the generational curse for me. Regardless of what anyone else wants to do, I have got to do it for me. And that's a scary thing to do at times. But we'll tell people out there that it's not easy, but you have to be able to do it. You have to be willing to do it.
Thank you, Absolutely. Monica. I was just writing
writing down that you broke the generational curse, and what a wonderful thing that is. You can actually stop child abuse here and now so it doesn't go forward in your family. That's a wonderful thing. My kids are all grown, and their kids are getting up there grown too, but I still feel that my talking about child abuse is helpful to the people who are suffering it now. And I believe, I really believe that fewer people are going to be abused in the future because all of us are talking out loud about it.
And
John?
We can go back to the years of Freud and your biggest and best scholars of the world, where we talked about emotional and mental health and psychological health. So it's not a new science. It's been a science that has been, and again, one thing that I want to work to do is to help alleviate the stigma in the African-American community on receiving mental health. Because receiving the mental health, you only need to receive it if there is a mental health issue going on. And if the mental health issue is either biological or it's environmental. So most people break it down that way. Biological means it will be something physically wrong. So there is a psychosis or bipolar or something else, you know, an illness. Psychosocially, which means that there is an environment of physical abuse, emotional abuse, domestic violence, something like that, something that's going on in the environment to where you've been socialized to it. And so abuse has been there as long as human beings have been around. Let's be realistic about it. But people talking about it openly and knowing what these things are and seeing the signs, yes, I think this is fairly new because we're removing the stigma. And I think the only reason that people haven't broken the stranglehold of stigma before now, and I always say an abuser's best weapons are going to be silence and shame. Those two things are going to be the best weapons an abuser can have to continue to move through life. If he guarantees your silence, and as they abuse us, we know this, the abusers tell you to not speak about the abuse, right? That is a part of the narcissism and the manipulation. And then there is the shame. If you do speak about it, then the people around you don't have the tools to help you, so they shame you and ostracize you. So I think by removing a lot of that and us have been on the battlefield with no help, and now through NASCA we're providing the help, future generations can now see what abuse looks like and sounds like, what narcissistic traits are, what maybe it is a mental health issue, bipolar or psychosis, or someone who is a manipulative person, what those things are and what they look like, and they can better feel empowered, especially children, to take their concerns to maybe a teacher, a church member, someone outside of the immediate family where it's not so socialized. And coming from a school environment, schools are doing better at allowing their teachers to really be a bridge between the child's mental and emotional health and what they need academically. So the teachers themselves can hear what they need to hear from the child, and literally by the click of a button, a press of an email on their computer, and they can send that concern right on up the flagpole, and that kid will have a counselor or someone at their door, if not by the end of the day, by the next day. So it's working really great in primary and secondary schools, but, you know, of course, with us, we have to worry about where the adults are who are out there now that don't have those resources. So we got to be thankful for what NASCA is doing right now, guys. So if any of you, again, are need help, you know, anyone who does need help, please reach out to the website and find the help that you need.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a good reminder. Yeah. The website is naasca.org. That stands for National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, org. And there's so many resources on that website for you. I'd like to give the phone number if anyone would like to call in and ask Monica a question or respond to what she's talking about. The guest call-in number is 646-595-2118. Give us a call. And I think it's John's turn. John?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for giving that information out. And I do want to let everyone know that that's every night of the week, Monday through Friday, on the NASCA show. That's a dedicated number. So please keep it in your phone. Some of the things that you talked about, when you described how you left and moved away, and it just reminds me of my life a lot, when you do that and say that, because it's true, and it's really a shame that a lot of us have to go to that extreme, to get away from the toxic environment that was put onto us as we were children, And it takes years and years to grow away from that, if ever you do, Because, one thing is, and I'm going to ask you a question about this at the end, but I did want to say about a few things that comes to mind and some of the reasons why you may have done this. And maybe y'all can just say yes or no, or just don't answer at all, but I'm just going to read them. And I can see this happening, So basically what this is that when you have toxic parents, okay, is that a lot of times if you can ever try to identify anything with this, because it's very hard to, number one, okay, but interacting with them, it's how they make you feel, okay? So if you are, confused and unsure of yourself, I think that's a lot on the table right there, being to something they may have said to you or done to you, or really feeling bad about yourself in some way or another, because they made you feel that way, telling you things. I've heard name calling and, fatty, all this stuff, things of that nature. And being continuously judged, that's something else. It's like you're always continuously just feeling judged constantly. Maybe feeling drained and angry and overwhelmed. Okay, it's just like you're not being respected, basically, with so many things. I mean, it's unlimited when it comes down to living your life every single day, the things you do. And that's the question I'm going to get here in a second after I say these other two or three, the manipulation part. But also, they make you feel the need to change your behavior, your natural ways, the things that you do naturally in your life just to please them somehow in some ways, because of the things that they're doing to you. So it's kind of like walking on eggshells, all the time. Kind of thing. So I do hope that, a lot of those days in both of your lives are well gone. And I know that both of you have endured a lot of that, which I have to a certain degree, but more of mine were a different side of things. And this is what the question's about, is that when it comes down to toxic relationships, okay, and Monica, that relationships are affected to the very core of the depth of it. What do you think is the difference in, if you could explain it to the public and even myself, because I still see conflicts between having toxic parents, okay, or having toxic relationships such as, say, friends, work or a group or, something to that nature?
Well, I think that there is a parallel, not as so much as a difference. I think there is a parallel, mm-hmm. almost a straight line between toxic parents and toxic relationships, because mm-hmm. if we have not dealt with the toxic parenting, however deep it went, to the level of abuse or just the level of emotional trauma, being put down, never felt loved or nurtured, neglected, what have you, we mm-hmm. move into the same behavior that we learned. Because identifying them as toxic parents means we have got to identify the pattern and the pathology of what toxic behavior is. And they are not exempt from that because they're your parents. That comes from that childhood, the seed that they plant with us as children, that they are our God. You know, and there's nothing that they're doing that's ever wrong because I'm your mama or I'm your daddy. And that word resonates with everything for us. So they are our gods to us because they're everything. And when you don't, and you don't challenge God, you know, and we can probably couple the manipulation, at least for me, I can say, with growing up in a quote-unquote family in church and growing up in the Southern Baptist Church. And my parents had us in church every Sunday. My father, not so much as a church goer, but my mother, yes. But we would get the living daylight kicked out of us Monday through Saturday. But come Sunday, you better be in church, you know. And so church was also used as a manipulation technique to guilt us about whatever this terrible behavior was that we would constantly do as kids that was the root cause of them abusing us. Or it was the result of them abusing us. So when you don't address any of that and you haven't learned anything different, you move into toxic, those same toxic behaviors in your other relationships. So your dating relationships, work environment relationships, relationships with neighbors, relationships with anything social, because it's the same pathology. And even though you don't think you're being toxic or negative or abusive to other people, you're being mm-hmm. toxic and negative and abusive to yourself because you are allowing the toxic and negative and abuse behavior to come into your life. And again, because you haven't learned it different. It ticked home for me. For anyone who's been on with us before, and I also talked about being in domestic violence relationships, two relationships that I had simultaneously to that last move that I am leaving my family and left the family, two relationships that I had over the span of 10 years were almost identical as far as the what I thought was the physical attributes, the personalities, just the overall type that I had in a dating partner back then. And it was the second relationship that dissolved, as the first one did, in a terrible physical fight. But the second relationship resulted in he and I both assaulting each other. And we were arrested for assault and were court-ordered to go to anger management classes. During my classes, sitting with that counselor, and it was maybe the second or third session in, and I had to recount to her my previous relationships and things of that nature. And she kind of gave me the boulder on the head moment when she said that I was, the relationship that I had up until that point and with this particular one that landed me in this situation, was I was trying to fix my relationship with my father by constantly getting into relationship with these guys where they turned toxic and negative and ultimately violent, that is the only demonstration of a man, woman, husband, wife. That's the only example and demonstration of a relationship that I had up until that point. And so I was mimicking the same behavior, and she was absolutely right. And mm-hmm. it was one of those things just like, well, where have you been all of my life? You know, and
mm-hmm.
it's also one of those things where it's, for anyone who's listening, it's never going to be any one thing. You're going to wake up and say today, okay, my life is going to be perfect. It's going to be great. And today is the exact day that I'm going to start healing and getting over my childhood trauma. No, it is going to be a series of events, just like the abuse that happened in your childhood. It's a series of events. But the series of events is when you become aware of it, you're going to be able to recall, I can recall my healing points, what I say, along my journey, versus the day-to-day things that happen, I can recall my healing points along my journey. And the more I can recall them, the less I can recall the exactness of those points that happened with the abuse in my childhood. I know that they were there. They're not fabricated. There's, you know, too many police reports that I tell people you can call up from when neighbors and us as kids or whatever would call the police because the my parents' fights would go astronomical. They were bad. So you start to say, take stock and say, if it, the journey is meant for you to happen when it's meant to happen, you're going to start to take stock and say, hey, okay, now this is another point in my healing. I need to learn to do something different, right? And so to, just to answer your point there, I think there's a parallel and almost a straight line that we can draw from toxic mm-hmm. parents directly to toxic relationships. If there's no reset point in between, there's no point of a disruption in between, you're only going to mimic the exact same thing that you've learned. And that is the science mm-hmm. of behavior. Oddly
right.
enough, that's exactly the science of behavior. You have to mm-hmm. learn a new behavior and unlearn old behavior in order to usher in new behavior. And that's what mm-hmm. that boils down to.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I wanted to ask you one more little thing, and maybe both y'all can kind of comment on this. Did y'all have a private life, you know, having to deal with, you know, toxic parents? In other words, did they give you a privacy, or did they really stay on top of you about stuff and really get into your business and, you know, constantly and just, you know, really smuggle you that way?
I'll go with that. Mine was, it was definitely private. And that was the feeling that began to overwhelm me at the time that I made the final decision to move away. I felt that I was smothering. I felt that I was just not breathing. So my father's favorite saying was, and it was a threat, but the favorite saying was, you better not ever tell anyone about what goes on in my house. And again, mm-hmm. that the silence that they silence you into that and threaten you into that silence. But it was nothing you could ever do to make them feel good enough, even though you were being put down if you didn't do a certain thing, and then you would go and do that thing, and then it was still another put down or something else was just not right, which is where all of us get the people-pleasing part of, you know, as adults, part of that comes from. And that's just another point of the inability to self-love when you feel you have to please everyone else. So we have to also mm-hmm. unlearn that. So it was mm-hmm. Very private in our homes because, again, with friends and family members, I mean, there were neighbors that knew that things were going on because, you know, when as I got older, having conversations with the neighbors' kids and stuff like that, and people would say that, well, you know, our mom had to call the police last night, and we heard you guys fighting. It was my mom who called the police. They would do this in secret and realizing it was a lot of the women doing it to help one another. So it was an environmental thing that it happened within my immediate neighborhood. But it was as far as the actual abuse, my father never laid a finger on us in front of anyone ever, anywhere, publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Never did it. Never at a vacation, never at a family function, never at church, never anywhere. We were beaten physically, fist to the face, pushed into mm-hmm. a wall, smacked across the face, hit with the baseball bat. That happened in the home. And so the privacy of that and whatever it resonated in his head, he felt that it was his right to do that. And again, that shame comes along with you wanting to, that's where the people-pleasing thing comes in, because you're wanting to overextend yourself and be such an overachiever because you're trying to convince yourself that you're such a good person and you can do all these great things and I can do so much, and by me doing so much that maybe my parents will finally love me because they treated me like crap all of these years, you know. And that's, again, that private thing that we've got to start pulling the sheets back off of, and again, start forgiving yourself, because there was nothing you could have done different to stop them from abusing you during that time. There was absolutely nothing other than to vanish and make yourself someone else's kid. You know, we know that wouldn't have happened. So, that's how that got to happen.
Well, you know, too, and that also leads to so many things, and I'm glad you brought that up right at the end, because I was thinking that almost the entire time, is that, you know, some of these kids that go through this, I mean, considering – You're one of the lucky ones, you know, to say that you're alive to that, if you really want to look at it, because there are an amazing amount of children that just don't make it through that. You know, they wind up doing so many things, and, you know, the next thing you know, they're not with us anymore due to all kinds of circumstances. You can go from human trafficking to drugs and alcohol and just everything in between. And
you know, another thing I want to add in, and that's great, John, is you're saying that what's happening to a lot of kids with where they end up. Another thing we need to add in, and it's not being talked about, I think this phenomenon where we have these young teenage boys involved in the mass shootings, I think there's something there that no one is talking about when it comes to childhood trauma. So we know suicide. We know the suicide for sure. We know the drugs and alcohol for sure. We know them being the runaways and ended up in the human trafficking. Mm-hmm. But this now, there's got to be some type of study or someone putting a new spin on this type of behavior, because no one is talking about what these – now, we can feel for the families and the victims. But where in the minds of these children did the switch go off that it was perfectly reasonable and okay for them to sit, and my thing, even just the sitting and planning of the mass shootings in the home with parents and grandparents, and no one notices anything? That lets me know there's a significant amount of neglect that went on in that home that you didn't know that your child had an AR assault rifle hidden under his bed. There's a significant amount of neglect behind that right there.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I just had talked about this 2 weeks ago, and let me tell you something, this came up, and this is exactly what the conversation was. So, you know, when this happens, there are a lot of factors that go on, and another one would be the bullying, you know, that's being referred from mostly the father, I guess, you know, down to a young boy that does this. And, you know, there you go, you know, toxic parents, bam. So, you know, that's a great point.
Points out here that, again, for the people that are listening in, and they can also take a few of these things to where we can get a little bit of a objective perspective here. And again, with this same article, it's saying how to recognize, or what are the signs of a toxic parent. So I'll just fire some things off, and you guys can chime in and let me know what you think. I'm going to go like two at a time and pick out the ones that I think are most interesting. One says that they are disrespectful and emotionally reactive. What do you guys think?
Well, my mother was very emotionally reactive, and everything was always made to be about her. No matter what it was, no matter what the subject, she turned it into something about herself. And,
That makes sense. I kind of think back on things with my mom as well. She was just very high strung, I think is the word that maybe we would use at that time, at that point in time. But you're absolutely right. It would make it about, you know, we came home and you know, this was the thing with my mom. She was just the homemaker, but she worked. But that her thing was to keep a pristine house. And if we came home and, my goodness, you left a sock in the floor. You were changing clothes to go out in your street clothes, that we called them, to go out and play. You got knocked across the floor for that because she just vacuumed the floor. You know what I mean? It was just no, we say filter when it comes to the words. And I guess that another point we're going to bring up is just boundaries, but it's just these emotional knee-jerk reactions to everything. And like you said, always making everything about her.
Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to add in.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Amy.
I was just going to say, you know what I wrote down? I wrote down, ask her if there's a list of toxic behaviors. And then you started giving us one, and that was a good synchronicity. Go ahead, John.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, what I'm wondering also is that, you know, because of those two in particular, it really makes me wonder if there's a difference on a level between a mother and a father. What about that?
This for me is a tricky thing because I thought maybe it was going to be a little bit further down on the list, but it's not there. But my mother didn't have a relationship with her dad until I was well into my teenage years, from what I understand. He was just an absent father. Way more stuff about the relationship we would hear around the house and what young kids needed to hear. He abandoned her. He left her. He never married my grandmother. My mother had a sister just very next to her in age, close proximity. It was always a question of whether he was her biological father, and you're making my aunt feel that it's her fault that no one supposedly knew who her father was. Just weird, again, inappropriate things for adults to be having conversations with other kids around. But again, that's them in that respect of being disrespectful, talking over you and talking at you and not talking to you. You're just seen as just another inanimate object, as if you were a coffee table, not knowing that the words and the things that are being said are going to take hold. So I don't know what the relationship would have been or could have been, but my mother ended up being put in a position when I was about 16 years old, maybe a little bit older than that, 17 or 18, I guess, where she had to go and remove my father from the care of a caregiver that he was in. He had lived in another state, and bring him back home to where we lived. She elected to have him move into the home with us. And it was the absolute most chaotic, crazy 6 months or so of our lives, because unbeknownst to us, my father was in the beginning stage. My grandfather was at the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. And I think my mother, again, felt some sense of duty to rescue him and fix their relationship. And here she is doing everything across the board she's supposed to do. She went to his home. She got him, sold his other house, brought him home to her. He's living with us. He's getting meals every day. He's going to church. He's taking pictures with the kids. He's going on trips with us. And not even grasping the idea that my grandfather is on a mental health decline. It even ticked up to where the fight between her and my father went intensified, because my father was all for he needs to be in supervised care. He doesn't need to be at home. We just can't handle him. And I think through that attempt, and when they finally did place him in an assisted living home, my mother felt so guilty. I could see her moping and being guilty, even though it was just a few minutes drives away from wherever we lived. You know what I mean? It wasn't out of state where it was, but for some reason she felt guilty. I don't know if she felt failure, she felt something. I don't know, but getting my mother to speak on what happened during those years of him not being with her and not being in the home, I think she, for some reason, tried to fix that within that span of time, having him live with us, that he never raised her and never lived in the house with her during her upbringing. And so if that was a hole or something gaping in her that never got fixed, I think she just felt a sense of failure that she wasn't able to fix it when she had the opportunity, but it wasn't her job to fix it. And I think at my grandfather's passing, again, seeing her being in an awfully torn up state, really, really mournful for him, and not just getting the sense that she didn't have a relationship with him before he died, or the relationship she would have wanted to have. But it's another one of those things during that time that I couldn't put my finger on, that you have to say the things to people that you need to say to them while they're here, because dead people can't hear you. Whether it's the anger, whether it's sadness, whether it's good things, whether it's you praising them, whether it's whatever, say the things that you need to say. And it was just also another example of where the power of speaking and talking about things in my home was not there. You know, it was just no nurturing there at all. And people not knowing how to go out and ask for help or for assistance for that. And I saw my mother mourn. When I say years, I mean years, where she kept my grandfather's clothes in the bedroom in the house that he lived in for years, until my dad had been actually told me secretly he was had been giving things away to the Salvation Army and finally was able to make a decision to remodel part of the house when they had to gut that room. So for years, she kept the things in the house. And I also knew that that was something that I didn't want to do as well, because that type of grief keeps you bounded. It keeps you tethered to something in your life that you're never going to get back, and you can't grow from that. So I think in that instance, you have that. For me and my instance with my father, I just told him in no uncertain terms, you're going to have to ask for it, buddy. If you want you and me to have a relationship as what you think a father and daughter is supposed to be, you are going to have to acknowledge what you've done to me. And I mean word for word, not every single instance, but you're going to have to say the words to me. I abused you, and I'm sorry. I didn't know better. You're going to have to say the words. And until that happens, you know, I'll give you another call about every 3 or 4 years to make sure that no one's sick or dying or on their deathbed. And it'll be a quick 5 or 10 minutes. And after that, we're done. You know, it's just that. But I do know I had to reconcile that within me. Because, again, going back earlier, talking about the previous domestic violence situation, I was repeating the same level of emotional violence and craziness in those relationships, because I was trying to fix the craziness that I needed to fix with my father. Not realizing it's not my job to fix it. I didn't abuse myself. He abused me. And it took me getting strong enough to realize that that is what that was, and for me to start looking inward and say, hey, no, I got to worry about me now. I can't worry about the feelings of someone else, especially someone that abused me. So I think it helps for a woman to reconcile whatever with their father, because you have the imagery of your daddy being, and this is what the world tells us, your daddy is supposed to be the good guy. Your daddy is supposed to protect you. But when your father is the one that neglects you and hurts you, then what? That alters your whole perception of what the other aspect of men in your life are supposed to be. And I'm just lucky that I was able to get with on the right path and get the right people in my life to help me change that perspective of what a potential partner would be or what should be, and start to identify the things that I want and didn't want in my life. And again, it's starting with understanding that I tolerate no negativity in my life anywhere at all right now. So for the ones that can reconcile it, great for you. But for the ones that can't reconcile it, don't carry it too much because it'll eat away at you. And just let it go. Just let it go because it's not your fault. They may never apologize for it. It's what we have to all kind of get in our head, the abuse. But it's I can honestly tell you, the one thing that women will probably have in common when it comes to the abuse from the father is a huge sense of disappointment in them as a man, that you are supposed to be my daddy. You are supposed to be my everything. Again, you're my protector, my this, my that. So why is it the way you treat me doesn't mimic that picture of where I'm 8 years old sitting on your lap at a birthday party and we're all smiles? So why, that's a picture in kind that, who knows, I may have gotten the living daylights knocked out of me, you know, 3 hours before or 3 hours later. So why is it that we can't be the picture? But in the reality, you're actually this. And it's a huge sense of disappointment when you have that. I had to really and truly let that word come to me over the years, because at some point it may feel like hatred, it may feel like anger, it may feel like whatever. And it finally dawned on me some years ago that he was just a complete and utter and total disappointment to me in my eyes as a father. And for you to be the only version of that that I had, you know, I could have done without it. And so for the women out there that are going through that, I plead with you, just let that go, because you may never reconcile it. And you're going to waste too much time trying to force a reconciliation, and it may not ever happen. And that's okay. You just got to love yourself enough to know you got to fill up that void for yourself.
And, you know, being a father myself, it's really so hard for me to absorb that into my heart that happened to you. And I'm so sorry that happened to you, because you're such a beautiful person and did not deserve that. And furthermore, I'm very proud of you for standing your ground, okay, and becoming the person that you are. Because let me tell you something. When a father basically holds love from you, you know, that will affect you forever. And that, to me, is the worst thing you could ever do. It's basically just shaming your child, you know, to the worst. And then physical abuse, you know, my God, how could you ever, you know, in my eyes. So it's hard for me, you know, to really think about the pain that you did suffer through that. But on the other hand, I'm very proud of you to know where you are and where you're going and what you've been through. You've been through so much, Martha, you know, and I'm very proud to know you. And I can't wait, you know, to hear more things in the future from you, you know, forever, because this always needs to be told. Because it never ends, you know. It's traits, you know. And the other thing too, and you brought this up yourself, is you know, the relationships too that it affects along the way. Not only in your family, but it could be relationships, you know, with your own self. You know, people that you're intimate with. You know, it's almost like they were brainwashed to only be with someone that was like them, because they were indulged in that for so long, they just don't know any better, basically, you know, until they finally realize that I got to do this. You know, I didn't know, you know, what life was like without that, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know?
I liken that to how we taste our food, right? and I really and truly begin to, I consider myself a small-time foodie. And living in from the East Coast to the West Coast, different parts of the state, I liken that for people who have to digest it and hear it in a different way. When we say that you're attracting the same type person to you that you're trying to get away from, but you don't know how, because that's the only example, again, like I said, demonstration of what a man is in your life for me. And that's what I repeatedly attracted this same type of guy, pattern, behavior into my life. And it was the same patterns and behaviors that my father did. I liken that to how you are with food. So if anyone's ever traveled a significant amount of distance away from your home, and let's just say your favorite food to eat, I'll say cornbread coming from the South. I know what my Southern down home cornbread tastes like, and yummy and buttery and spices and whatever, being from the South. When I moved to the Pacific Northwest and I ate cornbread here, and I'm looking at people like, this is how you guys cook cornbread?
Oh, I love my cornbread down
and,
here, girl.
And
you
not
got that right.
Wanting
yeah.
to offend mm-hmm. them. You understand? Not wanting to offend them. But my version of cornbread is the one way I've eaten cornbread the majority of my life. So getting here and eating a different type cornbread in a different way, when it either was over-seasoned, under-seasoned, whatever, it wasn't, they made cornbread muffins where I was used to a cornbread cake, whatever. You just had the exact same thing. It just tasted different. Or maybe it was presented different. And because you've never had an example of a different way to eat cornbread, you thought it was unpalatable. You didn't think it was pleasing. You didn't think it was welcoming. That is the exact type of logic, and it's buried deeply in our emotional sector in the brain. That is the very type of logic that we apply to relationships. I remember having a girlfriend years ago having an in-depth conversation and telling me that she had a guy, of the relationship she had gone bad, had gone sour, and she remember having one guy that treated her awesome, treated her really good, brought her breakfast in bed, gave her flowers, left her a little love note, and she never fully appreciated the guy because she thought he was a wimp. And when he actually finally broke up with her, she couldn't, but like, how dare you break up with me? It was that type of thing. But she had to realize how badly she was treating him only because he wasn't treating her badly. And she'd been used to the other bad relationships she'd been in for so long, she didn't know how to accept this guy who was being a really good, genuine guy to her. And that ultimately is a part of the cycle of abuse, because that is the psychological effect of abuse. Again, you have to become aware of that behavior in order to change the behavior. You can't change the behavior in your abuser, but you can change the behavior from other people being invited into your life and giving them the opportunity to create another aspect of abuse. So that's what that is. That's how that happens. All right, let's throw out a couple more points here. I'm looking at two more things here on my list, and it says that toxic people we'll put demanding and controlling together. We'll put those together. And another good one here says that they are boundaryless. So demanding and controlling, yes. And then they are boundaryless. They have no boundaries. They set no boundaries, nor do they respect boundaries. So what do you guys think?
I agree with that 100% about the boundaries. It's like they, I don't think they'll ever let the child, you know, put up a boundary. I think that they're so controlling that any boundary that the child tries to do, that they're going to use that against them, you know, to do who knows what, you know. And we talked about a lot of those things already on the show. I think that in a repercussive state is that at some point, you know, that child is either going to have to be taken charge of through someone else, or it's going to be so many years down the road where the child has grown up and they actually decided to set their own boundaries. You know, I really can't see, you know, a child having too many of those. But the parents, on the other hand, that they're going to have a boundary set up all the way around you and them, you know, inside the home, like you say, you know, and that when they go out, you know, from public, it's a whole new world, you know. It's like nothing like this is going on inside the house. However, it's the complete opposite, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's really how I feel about that. Mm-hmm.
The article here actually says, with boundaryless, I like everything that you said, and to support that, it says that they intrude on your personal space. They don't accept that you're a grown adult who is completely separate from them. They want to know about your personal life. They stand in your personal space, open your mail, come over uninvited, offer unsolicited advice, and undermine your parenting. A couple of those things are just kind of bing, 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 just kind of those things that, again, that were happening with me when I was feeling smothered. You know, people showing up at my apartment unannounced, calling unannounced all of the time, always with their issues or their problems. I can remember a time I was having mail put on hold. I think I had was moving or gone for a vacation or something, but I had mail put on hold to go to my parents' home. And I remember going to pick it up. And my father always had the habit of opening the mail with a butter knife, which was his version of a letter opener. He just liked to do a clean opening on the mail. My mother would rip it open just like I did. And I can remember this being another one of these times that we had yet another mind your own business and whatever type the topic of conversation was, a big blowout argument a few days before that. I go to pick up the mail. And he put the bag of the mail outside in the mailbox for me, so I don't even want to stop. Just stick it outside. I'll reach in the mailbox, and I'm gone. And I pick the mail up, and I get driven away about two blocks or so, and just stop at a red light or whatever, go to open the mail, and I see a couple of the letters have been opened. And I'm looking at this clean little swipe of the mail. I am furious. Just something in me boiled up and over and out. I can remember picking up the cell phone, calling my mom. She's at her work. And I just asked her, I had to come by and get some mail. Do you remember opening my mail for anything? Did you have to read my mail? And she's like, no, I'm at work. Why are you bothering me? Blah, 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 blah. So immediately I'm thinking, already looking at the way that it had been opened. And then she's telling me, no, she didn't do it. I automatically knew that he had done it. And it was just another one of these things that, maybe it's one of those conversations we had. Again, mind your business. You're too controlling. Why are you, you know, constantly doing this? And this is me well past my 23rd, 24th, 25th birthday. I don't know. It's one of those years leading up to the time that I'm moving away. I can't take it anymore. And I remember calling Dad to the house very calmly and asking him, why is the mail open? I get this little silence from him. And then the response I finally get from him is, well, I don't know. Maybe you need to call and ask your mother. Maybe she opened it by mistake. And I knew I had caught him in a lie right then. Mm-hmm. I hit the roof. I pulled my car over. And if I don't ever remember saying any cuss words to my father that day, I let out everyone I had in my vocabulary right then, because it was the final, how dare you? Who do you think you are? Now you're going to lie on my mother? You know, just that type of thing, to where the narcissist, the manipulation, the controlling, mm-hmm. the demanding, the blaming other people. And right. I hit the roof to the point that later in the day and 2 to 3 days later after that, I get a phone call from my sister and maybe a cousin or two or something as that. Monica's gone crazy, and she's called the house, and she's cursing me out. I don't know what's wrong with her, this, that, and the other. And it was, again, one of these things that what do you hope to accomplish by telling other people that I gave you a tongue lashing when you did this to me? Maybe I went a little bit overboard, but exactly what do you hope to accomplish by telling other people something else negative about me? And again, it's just where the vibration of that negativity just went so far and deep through the family.
Right.
And it's like, you know, no, you cannot call me anymore and tell me anything that my father said about me. So you're not allowed to call me anymore. He is a grown man. I'm a grown woman. I am not going to gossip about me, about something my father said to you, or thing in the thing, you know, that type of thing. And it's, you start cutting people off. You're done with it.
Right. Not only did he actually lie, you know, on your mother about that, he also shed the blame on someone else too. Okay. So there were two things there that are classic examples of it, and that was the perfect sword, because that's what they do. They never take any blame for anything.
Ownership, what they do.
Exactly, accountability. Yeah, and they never apologize, you know, for anything, you know, when it comes to that. So that was a really good story.
And that's, again, as
we
can pick it out when those things are happening at us at any age, again, it's got to come some point for us, because if we hold it in too long, and again, this goes back to me making the point about the mass shooter incident earlier, maybe it was best for me to just call you and give you a tongue lashing, versus for me to hold it in and then to go buy an AR assault rifle and then come back to the house and shoot the house up. You understand what I'm saying? It's weird of a logic as that is. For some people who can express it and let it out in another way, maybe this is why we are having people that we're seeing them go off the reservation, quote unquote, because there is a buildup of the type of abuse that they've had to keep mashed down and squashed down, and no one is hearing, no one is listening, and no one is caring, and no one sees this manipulator or liar for what they are. And you just have enough of it. At some point, you just say, dang it, I've had enough. And so with toxic parents or toxic people, I'm really hoping that we all can take a little bit of points from everything we've shared tonight and try to do our research and do our homework and look inward and really try to figure out what our triggers are and make sure that we can no longer get triggered by their behavior. But if we do, that we can learn different behaviors so we can then, you know, resolve the situation with a different response.
Thank you, Monica.
Annie, you were saying something? Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, hi. I was just going to say we have 7 minutes left, and I wanted to make a couple of comments on some ideas that came up. The idea of what a father was supposed to be, like your protector, your daddy, your manly man. My father was a pedophile, and he was a creepy person, very creepy in so many ways. I despised him, hated his guts. And then when I got married, I hated my husband. I thought I was supposed to. I mean, I didn't consciously think that, but that was what, well, my mother acted to my dad like she hated him too, so I was following that. And men who were not horrible and creepy like my father, they scared me. When I was in high school, I would go out with nice people, and they would be scary. It was so unknown. I would go to meet their parents, and they were so different. It was like another planet from my family. And so I didn't choose anyone nice. I chose people who were not nice. And I don't do that anymore.
And I wanted to say one more thing about my father being controlling and not having any boundaries. It's so sickening. He took the locks off the bathroom doors. He actually took the whole doorknob off and everything. So there was a hole and everything. And so you couldn't lock the door. And he would walk in on you. That was the whole point, is taking the thing off. And it was just horrifying. And I was an adult at the time. And it was horrifying. No boundaries. We've still got 5 minutes. Would you like to add anything more?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. But to your earlier point, Annie, that, again, it's a part of that that emotionally toxic pathology, to where you said the quote-unquote nice people you went out with, they scared you. Not because they did anything scary, but because their behavior was so totally unlike anything you had been exposed to, you didn't know what that was. So it was fearful for you. It was unknown. That's a natural human response, to fear the unknown. And so as weird as that is, that's probably why we as adults are not seeking help sooner than when we are, because seeking help means we have to acknowledge something is wrong. And acknowledge something's wrong means being, quote-unquote, normal people and nice behavior. Maybe if people are nice to you at your job and they're appreciating, which is where I began to feel it, outside of high school, was when I got out of beauty school and working as a stylist first before I went back to college, working in a hair salon and getting appreciation from stylists and coworkers and clients. And people are acknowledging me. They're wishing me happy birthday, and I did a good job, and telling me I'm beautiful. My makeup looks good every day. Just genuine, nice compliments. Very strange at first. But if we're lucky, we move past our fear of it, and we begin to accept it, because the other side of it is, not only is it unknown to us, the other side of it is we actually don't think we deserve it. Because that's what the abusers have ingrained in you, that you're not worthy of anything nice or good or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's just another part of the psychological part of the abuse that they use to further their abuse. So we all know that the physical part of the abuse, as most people will say that in domestic violence situations, but it's in any violence situation. The physical part of the abuse is typically the last straw. It starts emotionally and mentally and psychologically, and then it heightens itself to the point of being physical. So I commend you for breaking that out, because for the adults that are waiting to get healed or seeking the healing, most of us are doing it because it's unknown to us. And because it's unknown to us, we're afraid of what seeing a therapist or a counselor or getting help or seeking help looks like or sounds like. We're afraid of it. But I really and truly want to caution and leave all of you with the fact you've got to throw caution to the wind. Take a risk. Bet on yourself and go find help right now.
Yes, very good advice. And I'm glad you brought up the part about, you know, the different levels of the, you know, emotional abuse and then, you know, the physical abuse, you know, coming in. Those are the signs, you know, and believe me, you're exactly right. Everything that I've ever read up on and studied about this, you hit it right on the head. And I do want to ask one more question. I know we don't have too much time left. What about the physical repercussions of this type of abuse later in life, such as coming down with certain types of diseases?
Well, if everyone knows my story with lupus, all I can do is encourage most people to say is that your body sooner or later will start telling you what it needs to tell you. It's up to us whether we are listening to it or not. So take my life as a cautionary tale. Lupus is a result of ACEs. ACEs is adverse childhood experiences, and the adversity in my childhood was the abuse that I experienced. So please, look after your health, mental health, and your physical health, because your body can only fight internally so long what is happening to you outside. So a lot of health problems in general, whether they're linked to ACEs or not, can be attributed to healthy living and eating. So we've got to get back to really and truly embracing a well-balanced life between work, life, family, all of that. Make sure you're surrounding yourself with positivity and love and looking after your health, because your health is wealth. And there's no way you can get on this healing journey without really and truly appreciating and acknowledging your health.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here
tonight.
Thanks,
everybody. Our time is up. Thank you for being here tonight. And Monday through Friday, same time, same station.
Tomorrow, because that's gone.